Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. Your host this morning will be Miss Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warren County Court Substance Abuse Program. Like all our talk programs, we encourage you to call in to 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. This is a brand new program that we hope you'll definitely enjoy. And now, Radio Rehab with Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Tri-State. Lisa Seif again at Radio Rehab with a very exciting program for you this morning. I have my judge, Keith Meyer from Warwick County Superior One, who is an incredible man of knowledge, of compassion and experience to share with you in this time together. He's my friend, my mentor. He has definitely helped Warwick County, Indiana, understands substance abuse as an addiction. We together try to facilitate a drug court that is counseling-based and addiction model and treatment-based. But even besides that, he's an awesome man, and I can't wait for you to meet him. So I'm going to let you meet him right now and ask him to tell you about himself, what got him interested in alcoholism and drug addiction, and has definitely used his power and influence to make things happen. Lots of sober, drug-free people now coming through the court. So good morning.
Good morning,
Judge Meyer. Thank you so much for coming and guiding me and supporting this project.
Well, it's a real honor and a privilege to be here, Lisa, and such an important topic for our community and all the communities in the United States and actually the world now. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited when you told me you were beginning this program a couple of months ago. I think it's something that's definitely needed in our community, and I think it has a lot of potential. But you asked me about myself. As you indicated, I am the judge of the Warwick Superior Court Number 1. I've been on the bench now almost 8 years. But prior to that, I had been in the practice of law about 30 years. And when I first came out of law school, let me backtrack. When I was in law school, the one class that I really did not like was criminal law. And I always told myself I would never practice criminal law. Well, the first job I took after leaving law school was with the Evansville Police Department. And I was full-time in-house legal advisor for them. And that was really my first exposure to substance abuse. I grew up in the 60s, and I think your famous saying, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there. I do remember the 60s. Fortunately, I never developed a drug or an alcohol problem. But it affected a number of my friends. And when I started working at the police department, I spent a lot of time working with the narcotics officers, and I saw really the bad side of addiction.
The criminal side.
And, you know, we were struggling then in the criminal justice system on what to do with that. And no one really had a good answer. And then for the next 30 years, the criminal justice system struggled. I served a time as a public defender. I served as a chief deputy prosecutor. Now I'm on the bench. And so I've seen pretty much all sides of the issue. But I was always amazed by the lack of positive response to what we were doing in the system. And so for 30-some-odd years, I saw the criminal justice system struggling with addiction, ranging everywhere from knee-jerk reactions to palliative responses with some strokes of genius. But we have struggled, and I think the system is still struggling with the problem, although now with the advent of court alcohol and drug programs and drug courts, I think for the first time we're actually doing something on a large scale that is changing the system, and that's part of the reason why I ran for judge. You know, after you've been in the criminal justice system for approximately 30 years, there's a lot of burnout. Mm-hmm. You know, I was extremely frustrated. You know, I had clients that I had defended. And when I was in the prosecutor's office, I prosecuted people that I knew just sort of intuitively that, you know, these are not really bad people. You know, if you take off the veneer of addiction, you have a good person under there, but they have this terrible disease of addiction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then seeing them go to prison or jail and coming out and really not being any better. And the logic is really simple. You know, you don't take a person who has a mental health issue or a substance issue and put them in an institution with 500 or 1,000 other people, lock them up for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for however many number of years with a group of people who have the same, if not worse, problems and then expect them to come out better. That just generally doesn't mm-hmm. occur. And, you know, so we've really failed. And so many of the people that have come back later, you know, I asked them in court a lot of times, I said, how long was it after you exited the Department of Corrections that you started using again? And a lot of times it's a matter of hours. And it doesn't seem to have a great deal of correlation with the length of time they were in Department of Corrections. It could have been 10 years, could have been a year, but they're still using. And it was that sort of frustration, I think, that was a big motivator for me to seek the bench in Warrick County, the frustration. And I knew it needed to change. Whether I was the one who could change it, I didn't know. But, you know, my parents always told me that you're only going to get out of life what you're willing to put into it. And I guess the term now is maverick.
Yeah.
That's tossed out a lot in the media. And to some extent, I think I am a maverick because I am willing to take on the big challenges. And addiction is a big challenge in our system. You know,
you're definitely a workaholic. And I don't. So you have an addictive nature, compulsive nature that way. But it's definitely a force for the good and for the good fight. You're willing to fight for folks and fight for change. Do you, at the end of the day, when you go home, do you feel good that you are using this opportunity as a judge to make this fight a good fight? Because it takes so many hours when you're dealing with sickness. It's not an 8-to-5 deal. It's 24/7.
When you're dealing in court with people with addiction, and let me say it's not just in the criminal justice system. I mean, it's really rampant in the child welfare system. I see it in divorces, mm-hmm. post-divorce matters. I mean, it's everywhere in the system. And sometimes you are able to make a positive impact upon people and actually effect a change. And those, you know, they give you some inner peace when you can do that. But with my nature, I tend to carry with me the failures. Although I'm happy when someone succeeds, it really bothers me when I see someone and we're just not getting through to them and we're not affecting any sort of change. And, you know, that bothers me. So I don't know that I necessarily go home with this warm and fuzzy feeling as much as I do to sit down and think, well, what could I do differently? You know, how can we impact this person differently?
We still got to get up and go into battle every day, in other words.
Every day is a battle when you're dealing with this problem. And, you know, it's very easy to walk away from it and just do the typical sorts of things, listen to them, put them in prison, you know, whatever. But that doesn't really change anything.
Yeah, what did you say? You're incredible at bringing out the statistics and really looking at cost analysis. What's it cost to put somebody in jail compared to a drug court program?
Well, the Department of Corrections is telling us it's a little over $21,000 a year to house someone at the Indiana Department of Correction, and the cost varies from facility to facility. Actually, I think that figure is probably understated.
Mm-hmm.
Nationally, I think the lowest figure I've seen is around $30,000 a year, and that's for a young inmate who doesn't have any health problems, up to approximately $70,000 a year for an older inmate who has health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those figures are probably understated too. But the point is, we spend a tremendous amount of money on incarcerating people with addictions. And the current studies are showing that, you know, for every dollar spent on rehabilitation as opposed to incarceration, you're saving $12. Actually, this week, I think it was Wednesday in USA Today, there was a full-page ad on methamphetamine. And they were quoting statistics, and they showed a mother and a child, I believe. The mother had a methamphetamine problem, and she was in recovery and doing well. And, you know, they were quoting those figures. And you know, when we're incarcerating in this country, one out of every 100 people, that's a large number of people. And I think it was Winston Churchill, and I have the quote substantially correct, that a society is measured by what it does with its prisoners.
Wow.
And that's not a direct quote, but that Winston Churchill said something. And
because they're the most vulnerable and oppressed, or?
Well,
I'm
not sure. You know, he was a brilliant man, a good politician, and I think it just tell us, you know, an awareness of when we have a problem, how do we deal with it? And incarcerating a person who doesn't really need incarceration is not the way to deal with the problem. You know, that's not to say that there aren't people that need to go to prison.
Yes.
There are people that need to go to prison, believe me. And there's a certain number of those who need to be in prison and who aren't in prison. But then there's a lot of people in prison that there are probably other viable alternatives. And, you know, we need to look at all of that.
Yeah.
And you know, we need to decide, especially in the criminal justice system, who does need to be there and who doesn't, and what are the alternatives.
You know, in that Pew report, it also said there's such a disproportionate amount of minority people incarcerated.
Yeah, I was amazed, and I think, you know, that tells us something about our failures.
Yeah.
You know, one would think that at least statistically, if you have a minority and that's 10% of the population, then 10% of the people in prison would be that minority. But when that number is substantially higher, there's something wrong with that statistic. And, you know, I'm sure people have looked at it, and you know, we've all heard the stories as to why. But I haven't heard a lot about what we're doing to change that. And that's the important part. Mm-hmm. We know we have a problem. Now, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah. Well, you're definitely a do-about-it kind of person. Do you believe that you have done something about it? You've began to set a trend in the community that these folks don't need to be locked up?
I think so.
I think so, too.
At least we've got a dialogue going.
Right.
And I think the players in the criminal justice system are realizing that there are alternatives. And not only from their responsibility in the roles, for example, the defense attorneys, and you know, we're really blessed in this part of the state. We have a large number of excellent defense attorneys, and you know, their job is to ensure that their clients receive all of their rights during the process. It's not really to get people off. You know, it's to ensure their rights, and they do that. And if the client ends up being not guilty, then, you know, that's a good thing for the attorney, I guess. I'm not sure it's always good for the client. And, you know, along those lines, the criminal justice system is one of the biggest enablers of substance abuse.
I look at all the folks we see that were slapped on the hands so many times. One of our guys has 8 DUIs, got 2 or 3 of them in a week.
Well,
and had never been in rehab.
You've been in drug court when I asked the participants, you know, how did you manage to accumulate so many substance offenses? And, you know, the refrain on that is the system never did anything to me.
Yeah.
You know, they never made me take responsibility for my action. And, you know, the two things that I kind of look at when I'm sentencing a person is number one, how can I make them take responsibility for the consequences of their actions? Mm-hmm. And secondly, how do I give them a second chance? And if you can come up with
those are great things to ask yourself as a judge before you sentence somebody. Say, are they taking responsibility? And what was the second one? Are you giving them a second chance?
How to give them a second chance.
Wow.
And, you know, I think about that in every sentencing decision I make. And, you know, as a predicate to all of that, I mean, you have to look at the person. You have to decide, you know, and I think a lot of judges do this. When we see a criminal defendant, we sort of very generally think in our minds, is this a person that we need, that we're scared of, you know, and
or is this that the community would be scared of.
Right. Or is this a person who we're just kind of mad at because they have done such, lack of a better term, stupid things. And, of course, the people you're scared of, that's why we have the Department of Correction. The people in the other group, those are the people that you need to sit down with and figure out what's going on in their life, what brought them to this point, and what can we do to change it. And
so as a judge, sometimes to work with this population, you have to even, if you will, take the judge hat off and become their doctor, their coach, their teacher, their counselor. It's a lot of hats.
It is.
Not just cut and dry law.
But you know, it can be very simple if you just act human.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk to these people, and if you are really concerned with them, that will show through to them. And they will respond. I mean, you've seen in court a lot of times, you know, I'll get involved in fairly personal conversations with some of these people.
Yes.
You know, I want to know, why are you here?
Yeah.
You know, what can I do to help you?
Yeah, we used to in the first few months say, oh, my God, if Judge Meyer if we're here today, we'll be here till 6 tonight. Because each individual, he is going to want to know not just how they're doing, but how their family's doing. And you do. You take an interest in each one of them much more than you probably do in regular court.
Well, and I do. And the reason I do that is if I don't know what's going on in their life, I don't know when they're at risk. And, you know, I talk about a lot of personal and family things in court with the participants. And,
yes.
And really that's to kind of help me measure what's going on. And when I see something or I hear something from them that is different than what I've heard in the past, then, you know, it puts up a red flag. You know, mm-hmm. we need to pay attention. Something's going wrong here, and they may be gearing for a relapse. And
I was going to ask you about relapse because you had mentioned or recommended we bring Verdowski on the show.
Verdowski Miller, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he was an excellent interview. Thank you for pushing him our way. But he said the one thing he thinks that needs to still happen in the courtroom is that if we're thinking about this as an illness, addiction, as a disease, as a treatable disease, then we have to see it that way all the way through and not when they relapse go back to putting it into a criminal.
And Verdowski's right. You know, Verdowski's a good lawyer, and I think he's got a lot of common sense.
But relapse is scary for a judge.
Well, it is. But, you know, in the criminal justice system for, again, 30 years, at least in my memory, you know, we've vacillated back and forth between treating addiction as a public safety issue that requires this punitive response of incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
And in other times, we've looked at it more as a public health issue, as a disease,
yes.
and we try to treat it that way. And it's gone back and forth. I think we're on the side of the pendulum now where we're treating it as a public health issue, and it is a public health issue.
Absolutely.
And Verdowski's right. We've got to carry through with that. You know, we can't start one way and then switch and just keep going back and forth.
And I think you do. Your big concern about the amount of time it takes from the charges being filed to the sentencing is that they will continue to relapse, even when they're on bond. And you give them at least 90 days before they start drug court to settle in, and we expect that they may relapse. You've been very, very fair about that issue in our drug court program with relapse. However, do you have to... I mean, then you have prosecutors and law enforcement that want us to revoke folks or, you know, I mean, we still have some work to do in educating about relapse, I guess, is the question.
Yes. We've got a lot of education.
On the relapse end.
On the relapse end. And to come up with responses that are consistent and also are effective.
Yeah. And treatment needs to get better at dealing with relapse as well. My old days in treatment, you relapse, you're out. My way or the highway. You know, one relapse, you're out. Well, now relapse needs to be treated gently, I think. But
well, and you know, we're blessed by the fact that we have good treatment facilities in the Evansville area.
Yes, they've been good to us.
Of course, we've got such a large number of people with addiction problems that are seeking services at those facilities that, you know, they don't really have to be tolerant so much of relapse because there's somebody else to take that spot. If you don't want to get clean and stay clean, we've got people standing in the hallway ready to come in and do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's unfortunate. I understand it. And, you know, some extent you got to help the people that you can help, and the ones you can't help, you know, you need to do something else with them.
Well, one thing you've been good at as well, Judge, is individualizing. One size doesn't fit all. You have sanctions in your program, but you always consider individual circumstances. Does that make your job harder? Where it isn't a one size fits all kind of...
It makes it more difficult in the sense that you've got to be more creative.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty easy to come in a courtroom with some preconceived notions and some preconceived outcomes and just apply them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the criminal justice system, we have gotten very good at processing cases. I mean, criminal justice dockets are large throughout the United States, and the system, I mean, we can run through a number of cases in a very short period of time. But our failure is we're not doing a very good job at dealing with the people who are involved in those cases. And to deal with the people, the individual, you have to stop.
Yeah.
And you got to talk to them. You got to think about them. You've got to look into their history. You might have to talk to the family. But that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's,
you know,
almost like parenting.
It is. Yeah,
wow.
It is. I mean, taking the people through drug court is like being their parent.
And new playmates, new playthings,
right.
New playgrounds.
Of course, in a lot of cases, the people in drug court really didn't have parents. I mean, they had biological parents, but in terms of parents who were there to guide and teach them and to help them become
yeah.
independent, you know, they didn't have it. So,
yeah.
You know, you kind of take on the character mm-hmm. of a parent for
mm-hmm.
them.
That's the gift of the whole program.
The gift and the curse.
And the curse, absolutely.
Because I worry about them as much as I worry about my kids.
And they know that. You always say to them, look, if you get in a bad position, call me.
Oh, sure.
If you have to call me. You have an open door policy.
I do.
So, in closing, any thoughts on what we can do together in this community to help, is the word, unmute folks that are in a position of influence and power in this community to talk more about it from the podiums, from the courtrooms? We're so mute about the substance abuse issue in the political arena, the religious arena.
It is, for lack of a better term, a dirty topic, you know,
yes.
and unfortunately,
it's a good way to put it.
Everyone knows someone who has a substance problem. It might be themselves. It might be a brother or sister or a parent or an aunt or an uncle or a friend. I mean, we all know someone, and we tend to ignore it. I mean, we know it exists, but we don't do anything about it. And I think part of that is driven by the fact that, gosh, I don't know anything about addiction. How do I help my sibling or, mm-hmm. or my friend? So I think the more that the public learns about addiction, and it can be dealt with in the churches and the synagogues and the temples and it can be dealt with in schools in a lot of different areas, in social clubs.
Absolutely.
I mean, people need to understand what addiction is, mm-hmm. and what to do when someone is addicted.
Yeah, we used to hear the term intervention a lot. We don't hear it anymore. It's almost left to the courts to do that now. People don't know how to talk about it.
And the courts try to take care of a lot of problems. So I guess we are the big interveners.
Definitely. Well, I definitely would love to have you back. Tri-State, if you'd like to call, any questions, comments, we'll have Judge Keith Meyer back for sure. Call the station, 424-1400, email weoathepump. Let us know if there's anything else Judge Meyer could answer for you or myself. And for my recovering friends, I just want you to know this is Harold Meyer's nephew that I'm interviewing. Judge Keith Meyer is Harold Meyer's nephew. Those friends in the recovering rooms know Harold very well that have been around in the 12-step programs for a while. Anyway, any last minute anything, Judge, that you want to say to us?
Keep up the good work, and those of you that listen to the program, don't hesitate to call in and ask Lisa questions. I haven't known anyone any better at dealing with the addictive mind than Lisa. I mean, she's wonderful with these people, and she understands it so well, and she's just full of wonderful advice. So, utilize her. And
come visit our drug court.
Sure.
We're open. It's better than Judge Judy.
You got a slow afternoon on a Thursday. Come visit.
That's
it's
right.
Better than TV.
It is.
It's reality TV is what it is.
It sure is. And the judge would love to see you and introduce you, and you'd be part of our day, no doubt about it. If you want to hear this, it'll be on the podcast at lisaseifcares.net by the middle of next week. Please tune in again next week, Tri-State. We will be back. And remember, between now and next week, to do the next right thing. Thanks again.